The subject I want to talk about today applies to everyone, except two groups. There are two groups that what I will be talking about does not apply to directly, although it probably will in the longer term. But the two groups are very young children. So we've got two very young children here today who at the moment it doesn't apply to. And there's another group who I can think of nobody, quite frankly, in the church that's listening to me. There may be nobody I can think of anyway. And that are those people within the church who are irreconcilably separated, where two marriage partners, they're married within the church, but they can't get along with each other. They separate and they agree to live separate lives. They can't remarry. And therefore, you're looking at that would be the second group. But quite frankly, all children eventually, the subject I want to deal with today, all children eventually will deal with this. All teens, certainly all teens and singles. The teens and the singles in the church, it's particularly appropriate to. Probably the group that it's most appropriate to. All married people in the church also. And also all senior citizens, from puberty right the way through to 95 and beyond. That's what we're looking at. And the subject I want to talk about today is dating. And you think, well, how can married people? I mean, how do you have married people, therefore, interested in dating? What on earth has dating got to do with married people? Surely that is a teens and single subject. But there is a problem within our marriages, and it can really sum up an unhappy marriage in many cases, and that is that they stop courting. You know, once you court her, you stop courting, and that's basically the problem so often. We think, well, what about the elderly? You know, they're not getting married again. You know, they decide, right, you know, once is enough, or twice, or 10 times, or whatever it happens to be. Well, that implies that you don't really understand the subject of dating. Because dating goes beyond just a prelude to marriage. And I think what I can do is I can give you a bit of a story. There was a ministerial conference I was attending, and there was a group of us as ministers talking. I was one of them there. And we're talking about Ambassador College, because obviously Ambassador College was a place where dating took place. There was a lot of young people there. And we were talking about pre-Ambassador College and what we actually understood in our experience pre-Ambassador College. And really the understanding that we had was basically, as far as dating was concerned, was necking in the back of a cinema. And that was what you did on a date. You didn't matter what was going on the screen. That would had no relevance really. But there was just simply could not imagine. And the people around the table, I think it was at the time, they were Ambassador College graduates, and we could not imagine pre-Ambassador College having fun in just sitting down and talking. You know, that you could actually have fun sitting down and talking to a girl, or vice versa if you happen to be a girl. And yet in Ambassador College a totally different world opened up, and it was a totally different world. It was a world where there were certain rules, and the rules, as they used to be expressed, was ABC, avoid bodily contact. So ABC, avoid bodily contact, was one of the rules. The other rule that they applied in Brickett Wood certainly was two dates per semester with any one individual. And you know, if you actually log out, because the girls signed out with somebody, if you were signing out with somebody, all the Mrs. Horn had to do was run her eye down the list of sign outs for that particular individual and see, you know, John Bowles, John Bowles, John Bowles. No, he's got a problem, whatever it happens to be. But no, two dates per semester until your senior year. And then you could start, you know, surveying the field a little bit more at that time. But with that also, at a master college, dating was encouraged. It was encouraged greatly. In fact, you were more than encouraged two dates. You had to, therefore, because there was only two dates per semester, there's no bodily contact. In other words, you don't, there's no necking in the back of a cinema or anything like that. Even holding hands, you didn't even hold hands. You link arms and walk along arm in arm, and that's about the limit. And because of that two dates rule, you found yourself dating a whole range of different people, a whole range of the opposite sex. And that allowed you to therefore get to know a whole range of the opposite sex, which was very, very good. And this was what Mr. Armstrong was wanting, and this is what the rules were there for. This is why the rules existed. And yet, I was talking also at another ministerial conference. This was many years later. You know, after Worldwide broke up and everything else, I was talking to a particular individual who was quite prominent in the work. And he was saying how he basically disagreed with Mr. Armstrong, and how he tried to put the idea that the dating rules, really Mr. Armstrong didn't go along with them. Well, that's a load of nonsense. I'd like to just read to you a little bit here from, it's posted on the website, the Get Back on Track website, if you want to go over there and have a look at it. It's the 24th of June, special Worldwide News edition on recent history of the Philadelphia era. And he says there, it says, from its founding, I've made the slogan of the college, recapture true values. The college started with the highest moral and spiritual values, and it was God's college. A high moral and spiritual conduct had been vigorously taught and maintained. There was much teaching against necking and any sort of lovemaking among students. Going steady towards marriage was forbidden until the end of the first semester of the senior year. So he was very clear. Mr. Armstrong knew exactly what he was doing. Smoking and the use of drugs were prohibited. But as the liberal element gained control of the campus administration during those years of my absences from Pasadena, the high standard of student conduct was more and more liberalized through lack of discipline or enforcement, and the college was coming to be more like other college campuses. Now, I can, you know, personally vouch for that with several accounts that I have heard. I can think of, I've been a little bit careful about in case it discloses who in fact these came from, but I can think of one particular room monitor, a girl room monitor, where two in her room at that time were had to leave because they were pregnant. That was during this time. And I can think of another couple that had to get married. And these things were going on. There's no question of that. And it was a destruction of what Mr. Armstrong laid down. And yet, while we were there at Brickett Wood, and people used to kind of poo-poo the concepts that were coming from Brickett Wood, there was the policies that Mr. Armstrong had laid down were being implemented there. And in the area of dating, the right form of dating was encouraged. And so what I want to talk to really everybody about today is dating, both in and out of marriage, both before marriage and during marriage. Now, obviously, during marriage, you do not go ahead and date whoever you wish. You do that in fear of your life, probably, if your wife, your husband finds out about it. But no, obviously, that would be adultery, and that's not to be done. But within marriage is dating between husband and wife, and dating is still vital within marriage. And as we'll go on and see, the first point really will explain why it is so vital, because the first point I want to deal with is the main reason why we should date, why dating, why it's so important. Secondly, I want to talk about communication, because that is a large part of what a date is about. It's going out in a location and talking. That's basically what a date was about within college. Yes, you did fun things as well, but it was a case at a time to actually get to know somebody. Thirdly, I want to talk about how we're encouraged to date widely, not wildly, widely. that is before marriage. And even in marriage, there is the aspect that you can invite friends round. Again, group dates as such. At college, we would have kind of sing-alongs and this kind of thing, and we'd get together as a mixture of the sexes that was wholesome, was fun, was the way it ought to be. And that's the way we had in summer camp, for instance, and that is how it should be. Fourthly, I want to talk about how we need to date in varied ways. We need to vary it. You know, it's not okay. It's Monday night, first Monday of the week, right? Now is our date night. What do you want to do? All right, we'll go down to the Georgian Crown, and that's our date, and that's what we do every single Monday night, the first Monday of every week or every month or whatever. No, it needs to be varied. Fifthly, dates do not have to be expensive. And that again is something within marriage that we can neglect to date, and yet we don't have to make it expensive. Sixthly, I want to talk about morality on a date. Now, obviously, this refers to before marriage, or somebody who's widowed. It's not referring to somebody who is married. When you're on a date, obviously, there's still decorum in what you do. And seventhly, I want to talk about giving a date. There's 7 points this time, so we're going to have to get our skates on to get through them all. But we do need to learn how to give a date. This sermon or this Bible study is a series of sermons and Bible studies I want to give about marriage and the family. And I think this is a good place to start, because obviously if you're not dating properly, it's not going to lead into marriage properly. And within marriage, obviously, the dating practice should then carry on. The second one would probably be about sex and all the ramifications in there. A third one and fourth one are probably about wife's role and husband's role in marriage. So probably about a series of four that I'm thinking of giving. But why should we date? What is the reason? And the reason is that we are incomplete. If you turn over to Genesis chapter 2, this is brought out in Genesis by God as to the reason why we're male and female. And this really is something that I could not understand prior to coming to college. You know, how do you have fun on a date? Just talking to somebody. Well, it's not just talking to somebody, it's talking to somebody of the opposite sex. And the minds work differently. I mean, anybody that's married understands the mind of man and the mind of a woman work differently. And you don't really get to know that and really understand it until you are married. And it probably takes about 20 years to really get to grips with it then. And even then, it's still a struggle at times. But in the nicest possible. No, I've been warned. Let me just preface: if the internet connection suddenly goes off at any stage during these four sermons, you will know that my wife, who is sitting there with a finger poised above the button, you will know actually what has actually happened. But in Genesis 2, verse 18, it says, "And the Eternal Lord God said, 'It's not good that a man should be alone. I'll make him a help, meet for him, or fit for him, a help that is suitable.'" So in other words, the two are really two halves of the one human species. They're almost like two different types that are very, very different, yet living, you know, side by side. And that one, the woman has been made a help that is suitable for the man. And over in verse 23... it says, "And Adam said, 'This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She'll be called woman because she was taken out of man,' or Isha, because she's taken out of Ish. 'Therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh.' And they were both naked, man and his wife, and not ashamed." And it's not just one flesh sexually either. You're looking at a meeting of the minds. It's a case of the two halves of the mind also come together. I know that one particular company I did a lot of work for with a software business was a management learning resource company, and they had brain maps for couples. it used to be called Brain Map for Couples, didn't it? It was a resource that they used to have that they would give to couples. And you would fill, you know, males would fill in one of them, and the female would fill in, the wife would fill in the other, or girlfriend, or whoever. And then they'd be able to see the conflict, the potential conflicts between the two of them. Because you could see that the way in which the male and the female mind works, and they are different. We are incomplete by ourselves, fellas. And you ladies are also incomplete by yourselves. And it takes this other type of human being to really become complete. And we don't understand each other unless we sit down and we talk. And that's what a date is. A date is to sit down in a relaxed atmosphere and talk and get to know a member of the opposite sex. So it's a vital part, not only of a lead up to marriage. I mean, it's an absolutely vital part of lead up to marriage. And we can hear, you know, we just had some correspondence with somebody that horror stories, absolute horror stories. Somebody married within the church, and it was just really just incredible stories about what then happened. And I don't know what, in fact, they found out. The indication was that there wasn't the sufficient. There obviously had not been sufficient proper dating to really understand that individual. Now, at college, we had 4 years. And you were able to compare the field, as it were, because you could see all the different people that you dated a wide range of people. You therefore could see that, you know, some particular girl has certain interests, another girl has certain interests, and you get on with some people, you don't get on with others. You also saw people in different environments. I mean, I saw my wife all dressed up to the nines before a dance where she'd spent all, you know, hours and hours on whatever, her hair and so on. I also saw her down a hole in Israel, dressed up to the absolute guttles with a hat pulled over her head, crawling through aqueducts. And I also saw her freaking out before certain physical science survey, wasn't it? Yeah, that's right, physical science survey. How on earth am I going to get through that? And so I coached her on physical science survey because I did science for A-level, and she got a better mark than I did because she memorized it all. She hadn't a clue what I was talking about, but it was she got a better mark than I had anyway. But we also, you know, when you're looking at marriage, you know, what happens in the case of marriage as far as dating is concerned, we change over the years as well. You know, we start out and we date as a single. We date as, you know, we're single people. And then you get to know this married woman. This married woman is a bit different from the single girl that you met before. She's got all kinds of other responsibilities. And then along come the kids, and suddenly you're married to a mother. And a mother is very different from a single married woman. You know, a married woman who's without children. And then you get married to a mother-in-law, which again is another thing that's different. And if I'm not careful, I'm going to have the plug pulled on me. That, you know, you have all these different stages. And, you know, a father-in-law, a married man, or a single man. And then you end up married to a grandmother. And then you end up married to a great-grandmother, you know, or a great-grandfather. You know, you are married to all these different types of people. And if we do not continue to date, that means you get off by ourselves, just the two of you, and you can, in an environment which is conducive, and you just spend time talking. And you get to know this new individual that is changing through the years. This is what it's all part and parcel of. Turn over to 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter chapter 3. And if we don't do this, then there are going to be problems in our marriage. We're going to have problems within marriage. And it does take effort, particularly when you've got young children. It takes effort to make sure that this process is done. In 1 Peter chapter 3, it says verse 7, it says, likewise, in the same way, it says, you husband, dwell with them according to knowledge. Now, how are you going to get knowledge unless you actually sit down and you talk? If we don't talk, we don't have knowledge, and we cannot, therefore, dwell with them according to knowledge. It takes talking. So we've got to talk. We've got to discuss it. We've got to get to know them again. And they're not the same girl that we married all those years ago. You know, what do you mean, wanting a date? You know, I dated you before we were married, you know, 55 years ago. You know, that kind of thing. You husband, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honour to the wife as to a weaker vessel, and being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers are not hindered. You know, it talks about Matthew 5. It says, if you come with your gift to the altar, and there remember that you've got your wife or your husband has something against you, you leave your gift and go and reconcile, then come and offer the gift. And if that isn't done, I mean, and I say the wife or husband because that would apply in this specific case, but you know, it is true. If that isn't done, then there can be a problem. There can be a real problem. If you want to put in your notes, Proverbs 5, verse 15 to 19, it talks about there, it says, always be enraptured by a love. And it is, even as the years go on and the years go by, and you're married to this different individual, be it your wife, be it your husband, it takes time to get to know them and to keep knowing them. I mean, you know, it talks about Adam knew his wife Eve, and it's not just a sexual knowing. And as we'll come on, don't want to steal too much thunder from the second sermon about the sexual union, but the knowing, the word knowing, really does mean that. You've got to know somebody, and it takes dating, which is going into a location away from the kids, away from the normal humdrum environment, and takes going, something like that, and sitting down and talking in order to know them and to get to know them. Now, it's not a sin to be single. If somebody is single, decides, oh, well, this is the life for me. Christ was already married to Israel and lived a human life as a single individual. So it's certainly not a sin to be single. Paul and John the Baptist were single. Now, Paul might have been married. The indication is that he was married at one time. But he lived a life as a single individual. And John the Baptist certainly did. But you know, what kind of a rough life did they lead? You know, they were single for very good reason. But even there, you know, Paul mentions, it says, do we not have the power to lead about a wife or a sister, and so on. It was talking about the fact that female, and also Christ had people that were within the group of disciples. You know, Mary Magdalene was there, and there were other women there that were in that group of disciples. So he had female company, there's no question about that. And he, if you like, had been able to discuss things with this other kind of mindset. So we are incomplete by ourselves. This is why we date. This is why we need to date. And as we are married, so we change. And we need to keep up with each other, be it a mother, be it a mother-in-law, or a grandmother, great-grandmother, or whatever. We need to make sure that we keep up with each other in that regard. The second point is the fact of communication, because communication is an art to learn. Now, the actual word communication, it comes from the French word communer, which means to share. And when we communicate with each other, we are sharing what is inside us, and it comes out of our mouth. And this is why it says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And we do need to make sure that we open up to our wives and husbands, particularly. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. You know, on a date prior to marriage, you know, that there are things that you don't go ahead and discuss. It's not necessary to go ahead and open up. But once you are leading up to marriage, then yes, there should be an opening up, a progressive opening up, so that you know what you're going into, and so does your wife or your husband know what they are going into as well. But you're dating, each of us are dating a mind, and as I say, it's an art. It's an art form. It takes practice. I mean, an art like playing the piano. I started at about the age of, I'm not sure whether I was 7 or 8, playing, actually taking lessons. But it took years and years of practice. And I'd be forced to practice for an hour a day, every single day, from the age of about 7 or 8, right through till about the age of 11. And then suddenly, something dawned in my mind that, oh, this is fun, because I could actually play the thing then. But it was, you know, it was something that once, at that age of 7 or 8, my mother said, now, if you're going to start and you're going to get lessons, you've got to practice for an hour a day. And she got that understanding out of me first. And once that understanding, then she would stand there with a big stick saying, now, you said. And she made sure that I did. But it was the fact that she knew that that initial point, it was this practice that had to be learned. And then when I got to about the age of 11, it suddenly I could, you know, listen to Zed cars on the television or whatever, and I could sit down and play the piece and play whatever I wanted to play and read some music or whatever I needed to do. And suddenly it became interesting, and therefore they had to drag me off the piano from that point forward. And dating is an art form. It is something that we learn. Communication is something, the sharing, it takes practice. You can't do it just by saying, right, now we're going to communicate, right, sit down, shut up, we're communicating, you know, whatever it happens to be. Those that have studied these things have said that there are three areas in communication. One is leveling, and that leveling is saying how you feel, explaining, being able to explain how you feel personally. Secondly is listening, that is, you listen to how they feel. And then thirdly is validating. In other words, you rephrase, you check that what you understand is right. That you try and rephrase what you are hearing, and you try and check that you do really understand what the problem is or whatever. Now that is communication. And when we're dating a mind. We're not just dating a body. We're not just dating a face. I mean, somebody, if my, you know, I was in a car crash or something like that, and I had to have my face completely altered by plastic surgery, the mind is still there. Now, there would be scars in the mind as well after an accident like that, but the mind is still there. If we turn over to James, James chapter 3. James 3. It says in verse 8, it says that the tongue can no man tame. That's James chapter 3, verse 8. No man, notice. Not any man, no man can tame the tongue. So we're going to have to make sure that we understand, we don't take to heart everything that all people say. So, you know, we've got to develop even a thickish skin. We've got to learn how to put things in a tactful way. We've got to learn how to discuss things, to communicate with each other. You don't, again, love your neighbour as yourself applies very, very much so in this area. But it says, the tongue no man can tame, it's an unruly evil full of deadly poison. Therewith we bless God, even the Father, and therewith we curse men, which are made after the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceeds blessings and cursings. My brethren, these things should not be. You know, it's a case of getting the heart right, as I've said before, so that what comes out of our mouth is also correct. And in the area of marriage, in the area of dating, where we're learning for the dating within marriage, we need to learn. It's this art form, the way in which we communicate with each other is something that we've got to learn. Every single last one of us. Both telling people how you feel, listening to how they feel, and rephrasing it. You know, listening is a large part of it. It says, does a fountain send forth the same place, sweet and bitter? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olive, or a vine figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. Who is a wise and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out a good conversation his works with meekness and wisdom. So again, learning this art form within the marriage is vital. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, don't glory and don't lie against the truth. You need to, when we say something, I know I remember counselling somebody about marriage one time, you know, some years ago, and they were just getting in an arguments all the time. And I said, look, the only thing I can suggest about the arguments, when we communicate, we end up yelling at each other. Therefore, we just don't communicate. We just shut up. And I basically said something I read in Reader's Digest. And it is a case that instead of saying, you always do this, or you do this, and you're always doing this, and why do you do that? You say, when you do this, and when you do that, it makes me feel this way. Now that is I thought it was a very, very good suggestion, because we don't know. You know, you always do this, you always do that. No, it's our perception of it. It's a case. This is leveling how you feel about something. You know, when you do this, this is how I feel. You're sharing your feelings about how you feel, how it affects you, but you're not making an accusation against them, because. You know, they probably don't always do this and always don't do that. The chances are, in fact, you can almost guarantee that they won't always do this and always do that. If you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, don't glory and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual and devilish. And within our marriages, within our dating, and is the communication that we have, we've got to make sure that that earthly, sensual and devilish does not enter in. It should not be there. For where envying and strife is, there's confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that's from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy, good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of those that make peace. So where are these wars coming from among you, as it goes on into? And he says, look, you're trying to get what you want all the time. And all of us do it. All of us do it. And this is the way in which dating within marriage, dating prior to marriage, dating even when we're old and grey, you know, down way down the line, maybe a wife or a husband has died, just being able to be together with somebody of the opposite sex, where you've got this mindset which is different from ours, which is compatible. It's the other half in that sense. Which balances us out. And it is something that we do need. We do need. And it's something we need right through life as human beings. It's something that we, whichever sex we are incomplete by ourselves. We therefore need the input from the other sex. Even if we don't get married to them. Even if we're not leading up to marriage. We still need that input of the other sex, because we are incomplete. And the communication is an art form that needs to be learnt. This heart to heart, this getting from heart to heart and really expressing how you feel. As I say, in dating prior to marriage, you can never get that. You know, you don't get into the, because I mean some of the fellas go and that I've heard of, they go and unburden all their woes and problems and everything else onto this poor girl that they happen to date, and everybody runs like mad from anybody like that. I mean, nobody wants to go out on a date with somebody like that, and they wonder why they get shunned. You know, and as I said, the comment was made to me about certain people in the church, that you know, people in the church are weird. And certainly there are many strange single guys that have been around the church over the years. And we need to understand that, no, there's a place for unburdening. But as you, it is something within a marriage, it develops. There is this phrase that I've read, and I think it's very, very true, and that is that there is a 20-year warm-up in marriage. It takes 20 years to really get to the point where you really know somebody, and you know when that finger's going to go on the button and you switch them off if they overstep the mark. But it is. It takes years, years and years to really get to know somebody. So, and it's only by going out into an area, you know, out for a meal, or, well, we'll come on to some of those, the differences, but you, by going out into an environment that is conducive to talking, to enjoying yourself and talking. And it's also another phrase that I read, which I think is very, very true, that for a woman, lovemaking starts at breakfast. In other words, if there's going to be lovemaking that night, it starts at breakfast. This is the way women are. Now, that's not the case with the men. You know, men, right, I'm doing this, that's the way it is, right? And we're coming to it, night, 6 o'clock, no, 6 o'clock, no, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock, whatever it might be. Right, now's the time, okay. And the idea of foreplay is, are you awake? And that kind of thing, which again, we'll come into that in the second one of the series. But for a woman, lovemaking starts at breakfast, and it does take us a 20-year warm-up to really get to know somebody. And it is this knowing and this communication that allows us to really get to know somebody in that way. Now, if I don't, come on, I'm not going to get through all 7 points, am I? The third point, dating widely. Now, there are so many different, now this really applies obviously to the lead up to marriage. It doesn't, in marriage itself, it doesn't apply as a date, a one-on-one date at all. It does apply, however, in, say, the feast, that we as a married couple might go out with other couples. And it is good to be able to, in that sense, communicate, date, go out together widely. That you don't always stick with the same old group all the time. That you do get to know other people. And again, this is all part of what Mr. Armstrong laid down as far as dating in college was concerned. That he encouraged the students to date widely, to get to know a range of different, you know, girls for the fellas and fellas for the girls. If we look at 1 Corinthians chapter 12, 1 Corinthians chapter 12, now this, I know this is not quite, it's probably stretching the scripture a little bit to read it in this way, but I think it still applies. You know, God deals with each and every one of us in a different way. And here he's talking about differences of gifts in verse 4. It says, now there are differences of gifts, but the same Spirit. And there are differences of administrations, but the same Lord. And the differences of operations, but it's the same God that works all in all. But the manifestation of the Spirit is given to every man to profit all. So in other words, so everybody is benefited, not just himself in that sense. For to one is given by the Spirit a word of wisdom, to another the word of knowledge by the same Spirit, to another faith, to another by the same Spirit, another the gift of healing by the same Spirit. Now, as I say, you know, these are talking about spiritual gifts, and I know that in my own particular case, when I was ordained, it was like switching on a switch from the day before to the day after in the understanding of Scripture. The understanding of Scripture was very different. And it was, I'm convinced, it was a gift that was given so that I could go ahead and do the job that I had to do. And that's what these things are talking about. But there are cases where, again, if we're in the church, we will find that different people have different proclivities, different people have different gifts. And we should be aware that this is the case. So in putting your notes, Romans 12, verse 3 to 8, according to the grace given, you know, people have different graces, they have different things that are given to them, and we also need to recognize that if you are on the lead up to marriage, if you're a single person, single girl, single man, there are different types of people, and you need to get to know a wide range of people. If we're not going to be unequally yoked in mind, how do we therefore know if that is the case or not? If we don't date, if we don't date widely prior to marriage. This is again what Mr. Armstrong forced the students to do. It was a case that you had to go ahead and date widely. There are three basic types of people, for instance. There are people that are visual. Now, my wife tends to be visual. Now, all of us have the three types to some degree. There are people that are visual, there are people that are oral, and there are people that are tactile. I tend to be more tactile. I tend to feel things. I tend to, when I'm in music, I don't. It's not the sound of the music. I mean, whether someone's got a good voice or not a good voice, it's the way the thing is constructed. It's how I can get the hands on it and kind of imagine the geographic symmetry of the thing. You know, I tend to be tactile, but my wife, it's visual. It's the what it looks like is all important. And unless you communicate, unless we are dating, I won't understand how she feels. If I wasn't dating widely before marriage, I wouldn't understand that, you know, they're different people and they understand things in different ways. And they're different girls, you know, they understand things in different ways. If you notice over in James chapter 2, this is another point as well, because sometimes, as I said, sometimes the girls will run a mile from certain individuals, and with due cause as well, because they are strange, and this has happened in the past. But be aware that this scripture is here in James chapter 2. It says, "My brethren, don't have the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with respect of persons. For if there comes to your assembly a man with a gold ring and a goodly apparel, and there comes also a poor man in vile raiment, and you have respect to him that wears the gay clothing, and say to him, sit here in a good place, and say to the poor, stand over there, or sit by my footstool." It says, "Then are you not partial in yourself, and have become judges with evil thoughts?" You know, isn't that the way we are conducting ourselves? And in this area of dating, you know, is it only we fellas, I mean, the dating prior to marriage, is it only the good-looking girls that get the dates? I mean, that again is not right. That's not the way Mr. Armstrong did it. It's the case that you go ahead and you date widely. And it's, you're not showing favoritism in that sense. "Listen, my beloved brethren, hasn't God chosen the poor of this earth, rich in faith and heirs of the kingdom which is promised them that love him? But you've despised the poor. Don't rich men oppress you and draw you before the judgment seats?" It says, "If you fulfill the royal law," verse 8, "according to the scripture, you'll love your neighbor as yourself, you do well. But if you have respect of persons, you commit sin and are convicted of the law as transgression." So, as transgressors. So, it can be applied in that way. And those that are single within the church should bear that in mind, that we should in fact date widely in that regard. And we who are married should in fact, at the feast, invite people who we don't normally invite. So we communicate with people that we don't normally necessarily get on with, naturally get on with. You know, it's no problem in having friends and very close friends, but it is necessary that scripture can be applied and applied in the right way. It even talks about, if you put in your notes, Luke 16 verse 9, about making friends of the mammon of unrighteousness, that in the future they'll receive you into everlasting dwelling places. And my understanding of that verse is that the most likely understanding of that verse is the fact that we can use our physical resources now, whatever it happens to be, to make friends among the church members, so that in the future, in the very kingdom of God, we will be welcomed into eternal dwelling places. So there will, because you know, we will have places that we will be dwelling in, and there will be friendships that we've made within this particular life that we have here, which will go on for eternity. And so even after we're married, we still, this communication, because there's nothing sexual about the dating. It's not just necking in the back of the cinema or whatever. Dating is a case of getting to know somebody. And if we date widely, and we do so even after marriage, we invite people into our homes and we get to know a wide range of people. A wild range of people. We already know that. At least some people know us. And then it does help in this regard. And it also helps us in the selection of a mate, ultimately. And fourthly, the dating in varied ways. If we go over to the Song of Solomon... Song of Solomon is a book we don't tend to read very much. It's after Ecclesiastes. You have Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and the Song of Solomon. But in the Song of Solomon, you can see here the different environments that were being mentioned. In Song of Solomon chapter 2, notice verse 4. "He brought me to the banqueting house," or he brought me to the... What's the local restaurant or whatever it is, Harvester, a steakhouse or whatever it might be. He brought me to the Harvester, and his banners over me were one of love, and stay me with flagons, comfort me with apples and gin and tonics, for I'm sick of love, all this kind of thing. So there is, you know, somebody being taken out on a date and being taken out to the Harvester or to some posh restaurant or whatever. Mind you, a little bit more there. He says, his left hand is under my head and his right hand embraces me. Well, you better leave that till you're married and you're home, until that actually happens. But you can see the way in which this particular location is, this house of wine or whatever. In chapter 7, here's another location being mentioned. I am my beloved's, verse 10. And his desire is towards me. Come, my beloved, let us go forth into the field. Let us lodge in the villages. Let us get up early in the vineyards. Let us see the wine flourish where the tender grape appeared and the pomegranates bud forth, and I'll give you there my loves. So, again, they're out in the open. They've gone out. Perhaps they go ahead and they rent a cottage somewhere and get away from the kids or whatever. This is another location, another example. Coming out of the Song of Solomon. Notice over in chapter 8, in verse 5, it says, who is this that comes up from the wilderness, leaning on her beloved? I raised you under the apple tree. There my mother brought you forth. There she brought you forth that bare you. So again, they're coming out of the wilderness. They've gone off somewhere, just the two of them. And again, we're talking about married love. The Song of Solomon isn't read that much unless you get a sermon on married love, and here you're looking at the dates and dating in varied ways that would take place there. If we notice, let's have a look. There's all kinds of things that we can actually do as a date, and I'm particularly thinking of the married people. The differences in dates also depend on the individual. I can remember a particular date that my wife and I went on. This is after being married, and I don't know where the children were. We'd had children at that time, but I had a wonderful time. I mean, a really wonderful time. It was a good big lake, and we got two boards, and it was. We were out there for about 2 hours. And obviously, my wife was enjoying herself. I mean, she stayed out there right in the middle of the lake for 2 full hours. So she obviously must have been enjoying herself. And then every time I went past on my board with windsurfing board, we'd go across and I would check she was all right. She was falling off one side. She'd fall off the other side. And she managed all right. And we never actually went windsurfing again on a date. I found out later when we'd actually got to shore that... she didn't quite view it the same way as I did, but it was a wonderful day. I mean, it was the wind was really blowing quite well, and we had a rare old time. Thereafter, when I went windsurfing, she stayed on the shore. I think then also that there is a case of taking turns in choosing what in fact needs to be done within a married date, and I think probably she got her own back. It's kind of going shopping and choosing Dolly's knickers or something like this that would really not exactly fill me with rapturous attention. I've got a husband over in the corner nodding his head in understanding. But you see, you can get dates in varied ways, things that will stick in your mind for many, many years to come. But I still remember that particular one where we went windsurfing together. And so my wife nods in agreement. I'm sure it was about 2 hours we were out there, but you did actually make it across to the other shore, as I remember. Just across the other shore, yes. But no, there are all kinds of different things. If you're working in a city and the wife can go ahead and leave the children with somebody, you know, meet over lunch, go out for lunch. There's nothing to stop you. Or if you're working at home, as I do, occasionally what will happen is my wife will go in shopping or something. And if we happen to have two cars, when we had two cars, this was, not now, we tend to use just one car. But I would sometimes go in and meet her, and we'd have a baked potato or something out, and just have a bite to eat, just so we can spend some time together. And this is something that, you know, we can do. You can do. You can have a romantic dinner. Just, you know, make sure the kids, get rid of the kids, put them away with somebody else if you can. Put them away and either get them to bed early if you possibly can, and have a romantic dinner. You can go bowling, you can go for walks, skating. The basic point is, though, I mean, it's one thing if you go out to a play or something like that, that's fine, but you're not going to be talking, you're not going to be communicating. And most of the reason for a date is communication. It's so that you get to know this other mind. It's getting to know the other mind. And that is the most important area. It's getting a woman that is home all day with the children, then she needs to be made special. She needs to be taken out of the four walls. And that is something that needs to be done, and we as men don't tend to think of that. If we're out anyway, it's just good to be able to get home and get away from being out. You know, you're out all the time, and therefore you've got this conflict of interests. But we need to be aware of each other's and think about each other in that regard. Fifthly, dates do not have to be expensive. And we were watching Arkwright the other night, weren't we? Proverbs chapter 17 or 12, let's have a look. I'm not sure what I've... Let's have a look. Proverbs 12, I think it is. Yes, Proverbs 12, verse 27. Just change that here. It says, the slothful man doesn't roast that which he took in hunting. In other words, you go out, you hunt, and you put it, you bring the stag back, and you hang it in the back, and by the time you actually get round to doing something with it, it's full of maggots. It says, but the substance of a diligent man, a pointed man, as I think you'll find the actual word diligent means, is precious. In other words, we don't have to go out and actually blow all the money and you go out on some huge date. I remember we felt sorry for a particular couple, and we gave them some money to go out on a date because we knew they were hard up and they were really struggling. And we knew also that they hadn't actually been out on a date for, oh, I don't know how long, an awful long time. So we gave them what I thought was an awful lot of money to actually go out and have a meal. It would have covered everything that we would, you know, to go out on a date for ourselves. And yet they went ahead and they borrowed on the credit card over and top and above what we'd actually given them, because they wanted to go out and really push the boat out. And I thought, they're insane, absolutely insane. Because we, you know, it does take, it's easy to spend it, it's not so easy to actually make it. And yet dates do not have to be expensive. They just do not have to be expensive at all. If you go over to Proverbs chapter 15, you notice in verse 16, it says, better is a little with the fear of the eternal, that great treasure and trouble therewith. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is, than a stalled ox and hatred therewith, than going down the beef eater with the best, finest steak or, you know, the finest wine. If you've got something which is, you know, quite cheap, it is far, far better than going out and really pushing the boat out. I know that what we have done in the past, we literally just got in the car and we've driven, we've got the sea quite close to us, and we drive down to the sea and we'll park in front of the sea and we'll buy a packet of chips. Chips are French fries, people in America listening. And we'll buy some French fries and we'll go down there and we'll buy a can of wine or something like that, and we'll just sit and watch the sea and we'll talk. And that's, you know, that's fine. That's a date. It's a chance to get out of the house, a chance to get away by ourselves. And you singles that are listening to me, and you know, realize that this, you can do something similar. You can do something where you can just simply do something quite inexpensive. You do not have to go ahead and wine and dine all the time and spend a prodigious amount of money. It's not necessary. I know at college, one of the dates that we used to have was a Bible study, and that would be on the Friday night. It didn't cost you anything. That was a cheap date. You just simply went and you talked prior to the Bible study, and you listened to the Bible study, and you talked after the Bible study, and you walked the girl home. That was basically the end of the date. And it was fine. You know, you got to know certain girls that way. And there was no problem with that. I remember we had a dog at home, and when we were courting, the dog used to get its feet just about run off, because we used to get away from our parents and get out by ourselves. We used to take the dog for a walk, and the miles that dog went that week when I took Judy back to meet my parents. But there are many, many things that we can do to have the communication that we need within the marriages within the church. And we need, you know, those of you who are elderly, who are listening, and without maybe the prospect of marrying again, realize that you're going to give instruction to your children, your grandchildren, and also in the world tomorrow, the people that are going to be under you, that are going to be taught by you, are going to need, they're going to need knowledge, they're going to need understanding and education, and you're the one that would need to actually give that education. So it doesn't have to be expensive. It's just a case of being able to get out there, away from things, into a different environment, and talk and communicate, and communicate effectively. And so dating in and out of marriage can be done in that way, in a very inexpensive way. Now, there is morality in a date. Now, obviously, when you're looking at a married people going out on a date, there is still a morality. You still should behave. We should still behave ourselves with decorum, in the right way. But if we notice in Matthew, you just put in your notes Matthew 18 verse 6. It says, "Whoever offends these little ones, it'd be better that a millstone is wound around his neck and he's drowned in the deepest ocean." It also, if you give you an indication of the way in which it was actually looked at, if you put in your notes 1 Corinthians 7 verse 1, the question that came through was, is it good for a man not to touch a woman? There was a decorum there that is totally lacking in today's society. I remember going on a course at one time, and this particular guy was on this course. He'd been married 3 weeks. I think just over 3 weeks, and he was sleeping around with the women on the course. I mean, he'd only just been married 3 weeks, and he was off with other women at that particular course. You know, the morality in the world is in the gutter, and we've got to be recognize that our morality has got to be correct, and certainly within the college. You know, it was a case that we weren't even allowed to hold hands. I remember one particular dance. I think my wife probably will as well. When Mr. Hunting was dancing, my wife smiles. And we were engaged. Were we engaged? Or we're getting towards being engaged. But it was the one the one opportunity to get your hands on each other, basically. It was a dance. And Mr. Hunting kind of danced across to us. He says, "Right, space." He said, "Give some space between the two bodies," because we were a bit too close. But it was the way it should have been. This is the way that was necessary, and it was a case that there should be morality on a date. Remember Matthew 5:27-28. You know, Christ does say, he says, you know, you heard it said of old time that you shouldn't commit adultery. He says you shouldn't even look upon a woman to lust after her in your heart. And that's true within dating as well. 2 Peter chapter 2. "So you girls, make sure that you do not go ahead and dress provocatively unless you are married, and then you do so for your husband." But in 2 Peter chapter 2, But it's to be kept within marriage, and that is something that is flaunted all across our nations in the Western world today, and it's wrong. It should not be. 2 Peter chapter 2, it says, verse 12, it says, "These, as natural brute beasts, made to be taken and destroyed, speak evil of the things that they don't understand, and shall utterly perish in their own corruption, and receive the reward of unrighteousness as those that count it pleasure to riot in the daytime. Spots they are, and blemishes, sporting themselves with you, and their own deceivings while they feast with you, having eyes full of adultery, and that cannot cease from sin, beguiling unstable souls, and a heart they have exercised in covetous practice, cursed children." As it says over in 2 Timothy, you go back to 2 Timothy, in 2 Timothy, in chapter 3, there's a warning to us in the last time. It says, 2 Timothy chapter 3, it says, "This know, that in the last days perilous times shall come." And we can certainly witness this aspect, this morality or immorality that is there in society today, just by turning on the television. I mean, you turn on the television any time late at night and you've got to be very, very careful, certainly over here in the UK. And it says, "For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters," and so on. It's a case of this incoming selfishness that is there. And it then goes on down to verse 6. "For this sort are they that creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sins, led away with different lusts." And this is, you know, it is blazoned across our media today. And it is, again, the female form is used to sell just about every kind of product. And it's done in a way that is wrong. And yet, it is also the style of clothing that is prevalent today is also wrong. And you teenagers that are listening to me, you'd be aware that this is the case. Or you kids that are coming up towards teenage, be aware that this is the case. As it says in verse 13, it says, "Evil men and seducers will become worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. But continue you in the things that you have learned and have been assured of, knowing of whom you have learnt them." And if we go back and read The Missing Dimension in Sex, we understand a great deal more about the right use of the human body in a sexual area. And in the case of a date, that shouldn't even come into it. When you're going on a date prior to marriage, remember that this particular lady is your sister. If you're in the church, this lady is your sister. This gentleman is your brother. And that is the way it should be. Until you're married, that is, you know, that is the way it is. That's the way it must be and must remain. We must be totally different from the things that we see within the world. If we turn over to Proverbs chapter 6, Proverbs chapter 6. It says in Proverbs chapter 6, it says in verse 20, it says, "My son, keep your father's commandments and do not forsake the law of your mother." And the mother, the church, has given us clear, distinct guidelines as to how we conduct ourselves within this 21st century. We are looking at distinct guidelines that came from the apostle that was sent to us. And in this area of sexuality, and in this area of sexuality before marriage, it has been very, very clearly laid down. Very clearly. So within dating and dating rules and the way that we were taught within the college, it was recapture true values. And these should therefore come across into the church as well. And so although, yes, dating then carries on into marriage and it shouldn't stop all the way through because of this communication aspect, prior to marriage, it's essential that the morality is there on a date. It says, "Bind them continually upon your heart, tie them around your neck. When you go, it'll lead you. When you sleep, it'll keep you. When you awake, it'll talk with you. For the commandment is a lamp, the law is a light, and reproofs of instruction are the way of life." And it is a way that we were taught. It is a way that we're going to have to teach for eternity, or certainly into the millennium, this particular aspect of the way. this aspect of marriage and dating and the way in which we deal with each other, we're going to have to teach into the future. To keep you from the evil woman, from the flattery of the tongue of a strange woman, do not lust after her beauty in your heart, neither let her take you with her eyelids. For by means of a whorish woman, that's a woman that's acting like a whore, doesn't mean to say that she is a whore, she's just acting like one, a man is brought to the priest of bread, and the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. Can a man take fire into his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one go into upon hot coals and his feet not get burned? So is he that goes into his neighbour's wife. And that's whether that neighbour's, that particular girl is married at that time or will be married in the future, because she's going to be somebody's wife in the future. And this is what Mr. Armstrong understood. And this is the way we were taught, that we do not go ahead and we love our neighbour as ourself, both before marriage and in marriage, so that we do not go ahead and besmirch what is our neighbour's, whether it is our own marriage as far as our wife or our husband in the future, or somebody else's wife or husband in the future. So this morality within a date is essential. So he that goes into his neighbour's wife, whoever touches her shall not be innocent. Notice, whoever touches her. As I say, we've been given the guidelines. It was a case of linking arms on the dates, leading up to engaging. And when you're engaged to be married, then okay, it goes a little bit further. You can hold hands, you can give each other. Again, when you're looking towards marriage, you can give each other a hug or a kiss, which is fairly fleeting. But apart from occasional hugs, which again we made the most of when people were you didn't see anybody for a while. But again, this has got to be, it's got to be kept within bounds. It is the kind of thing that you should not do if you were married. In other words, you make sure that if you were married, whether it be before marriage or after marriage, if you were married, would you be comfortable in doing whatever you're about to do? And now that's the guidelines up to a point of the somebody that you are about to marry. If you go ahead and you're about to marry them, then a kiss goodnight is not going to go ahead, is no problem. But the morality on a date is essential. The normal dating, there should be no kissing, there should be no necking or whatever. That's just not part of it. It has no part within the church dates. Except if you're married. If you're married, that's different. But even there, it's got to be kept within bounds. It's got to make sure the decorum is there. Now, the reason why this is so, if I think back, if you put down in your notes where in Proverbs 10, verse 23, in fact, turn over to Proverbs chapter 10. Let's read it. We'll be there just about anyway. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 22, sorry. It says, the blessing of the eternal, it makes rich. And it makes rich, it's abundance, it gives abundance. The blessings of the eternal is abundance. And he adds no sorrow with it. Now the dating, if we date properly, there is no sorrow with it. If we date within marriage, there is no sorrow with it. We help to establish that union. If we date before marriage properly, there will be no sorrow with it. I mean, I was just thinking, Lynn Bradshaw. I remember dating Lynn Bradshaw. Now, most of you wouldn't know who Lynn Bradshaw is, but it's Lynn Meakin. Lynn Meakin, Mr. Meakin's wife. Gillian Sutcliffe. Gillian Sutcliffe is another one I've dated. And that's now Gillian Orchard. Mr. Orchard's wife down in, I think he's in Australia now, isn't he? Robin Sutcliffe. Robin Sutcliffe became Mrs. Hume. Who else? Diane Hoot. That became Mrs. Rhodes. And so on. I mean, it's easy for me to kind of give these certain names of their maiden names as I knew them. But there's no problem if I go across and were meeting any of their husbands. There's no problem because nothing went on that shouldn't have gone on. And same with Judy. as far as the dates that were at college, they were dating properly. There's no embarrassment afterwards. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. It's the way it should be. And that morality within the date is the way that we should behave. You know, be aware that you may meet their husband or their wife later, and it may not be you. So we have got to be careful that we make sure that anything that takes place is totally and utterly the way it ought to be prior to marriage. Now, in marriage, as I say, you start making love to your wife in the breakfast table. And so you go out on a date, and it leads inevitably, not inevitably, no, it's not inevitably, that's not true. It leads across into the bedroom, and there's no problem at all, because that's we'll come into it in the second sermon. That's the way it should be. Dates is just a part and parcel of that. But there is a decorum, and the woman's dress still should be the right decorum, should always be there. That should always be there. Final point, we need to give a date and make sure that we give a date. Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2. Philippians chapter 2 verse 3, it says, "Let nothing be done through strife or vain glory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than themselves." So often people will go ahead and they'll date somebody, and they'll do it to have the eye candy on their arm, basically. In other words, they'll date somebody so that they look good, and that's not the way it is. It says don't do that. It says in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than themselves. Philippians 2 verse 4 now. "Don't look on every man on his own things, but every man on the other things of others. And let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus." This mind needs to be applied in our area of dating as well. It's not a case that you take your wife to the football match every single week, and that's the date. That's, you know, it's not necessarily, unless she really likes football. I mean, that's a different matter. Or windsurfing, say. That wouldn't necessarily go down. "Who being in the form of God thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, took upon himself the form of a servant, and was made the likeness of man." So here Christ, in fact, he thought of others. And as it says, I don't think I'll actually read it, but Romans 15 verse 1 to 7, if you want to put it in your notes, that the strong need to bear the infirmities of the weak. And we do need to be thinking of each other. Again, simple things as far as going out on a date, both married and prior to marriage: washing, grooming, dry cleaning, you're being clean. You know, it's no, there's nothing wrong with being spontaneous, coming back and say, "Right, we're off. We'll go down and go sit by the sea and watch the sunset," or whatever. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, Judy will come up at times. You know, if I'm up in the garden, she'll bring cups of tea and we'll sit on the bench. The bench is falling to pieces at the moment, so we're going to get a new one in the next week or so. But no, washing and grooming and you know, being prepared for a date is also important. Let's turn over to 1 Corinthians 13. Just a couple of scriptures now to close. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 1, it says, "Though I speak with the tongues of men and angels and don't have this basic character of God, this outgoing character of God, this outgoing nature, God's way, and become a sounding brass and a tinkling cymbal." And it goes on then down in verse 4, it says, "This way of God, this outgoing way, this outgoing concern, suffers long, and it's kind. It doesn't envy. It doesn't vaunt itself. It isn't puffed up. You're giving a date. You're trying to help, to serve, to do whatever you can to the other person, whether it's before marriage or whether it's during marriage. That is what the date's all about. You must learn to, we all of us need to learn to give a date. It doesn't behave itself unseemly." In other words, it doesn't get dressed up to the nines in some kind of low-cut dress. It's not the way to do, not the way to behave. "It doesn't seek her own. It's not evilly provoked. It thinks no evil." And that's the way, that's the mind of God. That's the way that we must be, and the way in which we conduct ourselves on the dates. So final scripture over in Revelation chapter 2. Revelation chapter 2. We who are married, and you know, perhaps this is something that we need to get back to. Revelation chapter 2 verse 4. It says, "Nevertheless, I've got something against you, because you've left your first love." You've left your first love. And this is the antidote. This is the antidote to this particular condition. And this, as I say, this is the problem within so many marriages. They've stopped courting. And dating is courting. That's what courting is. It's taking the time and the trouble to get away by yourselves, just one-on-one, and get to know somebody again, because we all change down through the years, and it's something that we all do need. Remember, therefore, from where you've fallen. In other words, cast your mind back to this girl that you originally married, or this fellow that you originally married, from where you've fallen, and repent, turn around and change, and do your first works. And that's the solution. In other words, you cast your mind back, you think back to the way we were prior to marriage, when dates were, you know, if we did it right, there was something you look forward to, you got ready for, you made time for, and it's something that we all need to do, to get away by ourselves so that we really get to know each other. And again, knowing one another is a term that, you know, people understand as the sexual union. But it starts with dating. It starts with a date. It starts to getting to know each other, to get on the mind. The minds are compatible. And then it leads on into the sexual area, but within marriage. So that's the way we were actually taught. And certainly this idea that we had, as far as the ministers are concerned, this ministerial conference where we had this discussion, and we thought about the way we understood dating prior to coming to AC, and understanding a different way. It is God's way that we were taught at AC. It's a different way of behaving, and it's an outgoing, God-centered way of behaving in the area of dating. And as I say, dating doesn't just before marriage, it goes right through into marriage as well, and is something that all of us, every single one of us, needs to understand and put into practice.